Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players as we explore tone and the gear that gets it.
Tonight on the Flow Guitar Enthusiast, we are proud to welcome the legendary West Coast pedal steel player, J.D. Manis. JD has brought his beautiful Emmons pedal steel in studio to play for us and show us why Eric Clapton chose him to play on his song, Tears in Heaven. Along with JD, we have a surprise guest, Mr. Skip Edwards, piano player for many folks from Dwight Yoakam to, I cannot believe I'm forgetting his name right now. Anyways, it doesn't really matter. Anyhow, Flow Guitar Enthusiast is proudly sponsored by Sweetwater Musical Instruments and Pro Audio and our good friends at Guitar Hummer. GuitarHummer.com, and here are your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill.
Hey, good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast. Also, Skip is a pedal steel player.
That's right, but I cannot believe I forgot. And still, it's slipping my mind now.
What, Johnny Rivers and Dwight Yoakam?
I cannot remember Johnny Rivers, anyways.
Because you're just not a secret agent, man.
It's true.
That's it. Anyway, how are you doing today, Scott?
I'm doing good. I was over at our next week's guest studio in Pasadena, over at AEA Ribbon Mics with Mr. Wes Dooley, and we were. I was doing a shootout of different ribbon mics, and I actually got to play through Les Paul's actual favorite RCA R44 mic.
That's cool.
One that was even modified, even down to women's pantyhose. But it's, I have the story about it. Wes tells you about it, and then we have all their going through just pretty much almost all their ribbon mics, and that'll be coming up on YouTube hopefully before our show next week, so you guys can see that on my YouTube channel at Selenium.
Yes, very cool. Just want to let you guys know, I just talked today to Monique Caravello, and on the Monday show before New Year's, we're going to have Lance on from LSL Guitars, the owner of LSL Guitars. But she went down today to John 5 to get his amp. She's going to Tolex it, and she's going to give us a report on it.
So, that'd be cool.
So
cool.
She went down today to get the amp. So she's thought I'd let everybody know.
Purplify it. For those of you listening live, if you want to call in and ask JD or Skip a question, you can dial 323-203-0815. 323-203-0815, or you can join us on our live chat room at flowguitarenthusiast.com. So why don't we go ahead and take a quick break, and then we'll bring JD on.
Okay, sounds like a plan. Here we go. There's a product out called Guitar Hummer that's designed to give you vintage sound without the vintage weight. We all know the more a guitar is played, the better the sound. Guitar Hummer is a guitar stand that simulates play by sending gentle vibrations through your guitar as it sits. Swap your guitar stand for Guitar Hummer, and in just a few weeks, you will notice deeper, richer tone and improved sustain. But don't take our word for it. Try it for 60 days, and if you don't notice a marked difference, return it for a full refund. Go to GuitarHummer.com for more information or to purchase.
Hi, this is Aaron Raby from Sweetwater, inviting you to come to Sweetwater.com to check out our fantastic 24-day holiday giveaway. Every day from December 1st to December 21st, we'll be giving away fantastic prizes, including full-blown home studios from Avid, Presonus, guitar rigs from Line 6, PA gear from QSC, guitars from Martin, digital drums from Yamaha, and much more. Check it out at Sweetwater.com.
If I could die, my pain might go away.
Thank you. just lucky that way.
Buck Owens, The Byrds, Ringo Starr, Barry Manilow, Ronnie Millsap, Ray Charles, Eric Clapton, Joe Walsh, Vince Gill, Eric Elton John, and Hank Williams Jr. all have one thing in common. They all have played with our guest, J.D. Manis. Welcome, J.D.
Thank you very much, Scott.
It's an honor to have you on. It's just, where do we start here? First, well, tell us, how did you get into playing steel guitar over, you know, everyone else, like a lot of people playing guitar? What drew you to the steel guitar?
Growing up, we were fairly poor, and my mom had died when I was 7. And our neighbors across the way had this little lap steel with matching amplifier, and I loved it. Was a magnetone.
There's a brand that's coming back.
Yeah, and I really loved the color. It was perloid, gray perloid.
Wasn't black?
It wasn't black. And so my dad bought that for me, the amplifier and the steel, for $50, paid out in time, payments. And that was the beginning of my steel guitar love.
Wow. So was there a particular person at the time that you were listening to that you kind of idolized as a pedal steel player?
Not at that time. I was 11 years old. So, but as time went on, Lloyd Green became my first real hero. And even on Sweetheart of the Rodeo, I tried to play like Lloyd. I didn't quite pull it off, but I love, to this day, he's one of my best friends.
Well, so you bring up Sweetheart of the Radio. So that was the album you did with the Byrds, and Lloyd was on that also.
Lloyd played on, we each of us say we halved the thing up, you know, half and half. But Lloyd does know which ones I played on and which ones he played on. I don't remember just a couple of the tunes.
Well, I chose Life in Prison. I hope that that's one that you played on. According to Wikipedia, it is.
Okay, sure.
But, yeah, I mean, how did those sessions go with the Byrds? I mean, that was kind of a revolutionary because you were taking rock and roll and country and mixing it together one of the first times, if not the first time, out there.
Well, the glue was Gram Parsons because he wanted to be a country singer before his later years in being in rock and, you know, hanging out with the rock guys. So he really tried to be a country singer, and he picked all these songs that he could sing and gathered us all up, you know, as a group. He wanted me to be on the road with the Byrds, and I went, no, I want to be a session player. That's what I want to stay in town and do. So I was added to their band for this record.
Now, do you remember when you were doing those sessions, what pedal steel were you playing and amp, and how did they mic it, and how did that all go?
Well, I played a show bud, and it was called a fingertip model, and through a Fender amp, and it had 212s in it, a Fender twin, 212 inch speakers, JBLs.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, and so that's all I used. I had no effects, no nothing, just straight in steel guitar into the amplifier, and they mic'd it.
And did you have much of a choice of how they mic'd it, or did they just kind of did it and you just came in and did your thing?
They kind of did that, but at an early age I started paying attention to how they mic'd my amplifier because the sound would change from day to day sometimes. And I started paying attention to that, and I learned some tricks over the years on where to move the microphone to get a little different sound rather than turning treble and bass and all that stuff.
Well, so here in studio you have your black Emmons, and which let's just cover that right now. So does a black pedal steel sound better than other colors?
Oh, of course it does. Whether we know so or not, you know, that you talk to anybody that plays a black guitar and it sounds better.
and why is it?
We really don't know. You know, they're covered in Formica, most of them, a lot of them. And we think that the Formica contains the sound and pushes it up through the wood. So
it's got more dyes.
Yeah, there you go.
Adds the sustain. So you have your black Emmons, and then you have a Nashville 400 with you. And so you put the mic in a specific position. Can you tell us about what you did and kind of describe it to our listeners? And then maybe even show through playing how the difference happens.
Well, I placed the entrance, the where the sound would go into the mic, between the outer edge and the cone. Not on the cone, but between. So there's the outer edge, there's paper, then there's the cone. And I try to capture it. If I want to sound a little brighter, I'll aim it more toward the cone.
Yeah, or you mean the dome.
The dome.
Yeah. He's a little, well, you'll see it in the video. It's a little off access from the dome of the speaker, like just right next to it. So if you saw the silver dust cover, it would be right next to it.
Well, why don't you play a little sample and show us kind of the sound that you're getting out of there. Now, the should tell our listeners that the one thing that excited JD the most so far right now is he gets to use his reverb on his amp. So why is that you can't use your reverb when you go and do sessions?
Well, normally when you go to do a session, when you do a project and after they mix and put everything together, then they add reverb to the whole picture, I call it, to everything. And if you've already added reverb, say, to the steel or any instrument, now you have twice the reverb on there, and it washes it out. So that they don't want us to even bring reverbs or delays or anything. They want us to play straight through, kind of like what we're doing tonight here.
And so when you are able to use your own reverb, how do you like to have it really wet or just a slight bit of it?
In between the two that you just mentioned, where it sings to itself, the reverb brings everything out and lets it float, but not too wet to where it becomes, sounds like leakage.
Mm-hmm. Also, too, he's using in this amp, what's the wattage of this amp?
200 watts.
200 watts, and he's got a 15 in there, right?
Yes.
Is it just PV standard 15, or is it a special?
It's a Black Widow 1501.
Okay.
Yeah, it's different than most, speakers you'll see, because it's got a different kind of magnet looking on the back, it looks like to me.
Yeah, it's really heavy. The newer speakers today are lighter.
Yeah, a lot of the steel players I'm hearing are using a speaker that Eminence makes, a Neomag, which makes it light and easy to use.
Even PV does that. They have those models now, too.
Yeah. Tell us, so in that opening clip, I had the Life in Prison from the Byrds. The next thing was Hello Trouble from your Desert Rose Band. Now, that actually had Chris Hillman from the Byrds. So that must obviously, that connection must have happened there. Tell us about that band and what you did there.
Well, that's one of the best bands that I've ever been connected to. It's kind of funny how it came to be. John Jorgensen, the great guitar player, mm-hmm. came into the band wanting it to be more rock. And he is a big Beatles fan. He knows every Beatles song. He can play them all. He knows them all, knows how to do all the licks. And I wanted the band to be a country band.
Mm-hmm.
So it became this, no pun intended, push-pull kind of thing, and I started playing a lot more because I thought, if I don't play, this is in rehearsals, if I don't play more, the steel's not going to be here.
Right.
It's going to become a guitar band. So I started playing a whole lot more, and John come to me and he says, I've got these parts worked out, if you don't mind, let me. I said, but you need to do the same for me. I've got stuff worked out too. And we became this kind of a duo,
mm-hmm.
And there was no more confliction there. He understood where I was coming from, and the Desert Rose Band grew from that, along with Hillman's, great songs. He and Steve Hill wrote those songs.
Right.
So, it's one of the best bands I've ever played in. In fact, we don't play very often anymore together, but we're going to be at Albert Lee's birthday party on the 9th of January.
Oh, really?
Out at the Canyon Club.
Oh, and where's that's over in the, it's in the valley.
It's in Calabasas.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. Yeah, and they have dinner there, I think, right?
Yeah, and it's going to be Albert's 70th birthday. Emmylou Harris is coming. Rodney Crowell will be there.
January 9th.
Rosie Flores.
I'm going to write that. I'm going to come to
and
that.
And so it's going to be, we're going to play a mini Desert Rose thing because we're all going to be there.
Ah.
And so we're going to do at least 3 or 4 songs maybe.
Oh, that'd be
with
cool.
Albert playing Hello Trouble with us.
Oh, cool.
That's what he wants to do.
Are you is that your main reason? Or are you going to play other songs with Albert Lee?
Yeah, I'm going to play it the entire night with whoever will have me. Until they say, get off of there, guy. And also, one more thing. We're going to be playing in Norway in July.
Wow.
The Desert Rose Band is a big deal in Norway, so we're going to go over there and do a festival.
Cool. Now, you mentioned push-pull. So for our listeners, those that aren't pedal steel players, what's the difference between what makes it a push-pull and what makes a guitar not a push-pull? And is there a sound difference in your opinion?
There is a sound difference, and I believe it's in the changer, which is the mechanism that pulls or lowers strings.
Mm-hmm.
There are some all-pull guitars that sound real close to an Emmons, but not quite. And that's what our whole agenda is everybody wants their guitars to sound like an Emmons, whether they admit it or not. The Emmons is the benchmark.
It's true. For those of you that, well, you'll hear an ad from my father's shop. So in full disclosure, it's from my father's shop. As much as in guitars I am, my dad is into pedal steel. But he's always had this red, it's not black, but red Emmons and push-pull. And he's always trying to find the steel guitar to mate that sound. I don't think he ever finds it, but he always should just go back to the Emmons.
Well, I've been looking for I don't know how many years, and I haven't found it. I've been playing this guitar here for over 40 years.
Yeah.
And I haven't found it yet.
Well, I think he, you know, he's been playing. He plays Mullins now, which we'll hear about later. But he's very happy with the Mullins, but I just think, you know, he's always chasing the original sound of his first pedal steel. But probably we all are. I mean, my first guitar was a Les Paul Studio. And I don't play it that much, but that's the guitar I love the most.
See, there you go. That's
it was my first.
That's what we do. You know, we hang on to that stuff.
Yep, exactly. Now, did you ever create any signature models through any companies? Or help design any?
No, I did not. But I did learn how to work on these old guitars way back when they were actually producing them on a fairly good scale. I was one of the first people they sent one to me in kit form.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They sent it to me in a case. It was just a box full of parts. And a little story, I'll back up a little ways. Buddy Emmons loaned me a black Emmons. It was the first Emmons I had.
Mm-hmm.
And I got it to the house, turned it upside down, and they have a lot of little springs on them they call shock springs. And there has to be a little bit of slop in the pedals here and there. And I took all those springs off so there wouldn't be any slop. It'd be nice and tight. And then it would never tune up. So I called Buddy Emmons and I said, what's wrong with this guitar? It won't tune up. And the first thing out of his mouth, he said, you took all the springs off, didn't you? I said, yes. He says, put them all back on. Because you need them. And from that point on is where I learned how to work on the guitars.
Mm-hmm.
And then came the kit form guitars. And that happened 2 or 3 times with me.
Wow. Now, so you have knee levers, right? I see. Yeah.
Yes.
Knee levers and pedals. So what do your knee levers and pedals do? How do you have yours arranged? Because I know you can choose. Everybody can choose them kind of differently. What's your setup?
The floor pedals are A, B, and C,
mm-hmm.
which is real common. We call it the Buddy Emmons setup. The levers can be set up however you want, however the person wants them to be. Like I lower on one of them, I raise on the other, certain strings. Same with the right knee, it lowers and raises different strings. So that's really a personal thing as to how you want the levers to be set up.
Now, when you're playing, pedal steel players use a volume pedal. Can you kind of demonstrate how you use that to express your tone and what unique sounds you can get when you use that as part of your playing?
The volume pedal is what is called an expression pedal. We call it volume, but it brings in volume at whatever speed you want it to be. It can go, or it can be. And by the time you add strings to that, you know, a chordal effect, you can make it really soft up to louder. So it's really an expression pedal, but we call it volume. You're right in that.
what volume pedal do you use?
I use an old Emmons pedal. It's just what I got used to. There are a lot of brands in the market that are great. Mm-hmm. The Hilton pedal is really good. You know, what is Dave's pedal?
Goodrich.
No, Dave Beatty.
Telonics.
Telonics. That's a really good pedal.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's a personal thing, too.
Yeah.
So, you know, a volume pedal is a volume pedal. It functions the same way no matter who made it.
Right. Now, can you describe kind of your studio setup versus your live rig and kind of how you get your sound live versus studio?
Well, the studio setup is exactly what I'm playing through right now. It's an amplifier. The steel guitar goes from the volume pedal straight into the amplifier.
No other effects at all?
No. They don't want you to bring them. We talked about that.
Well, I know, but like nothing like a chorus or anything like that.
Well, I have a little thing here called a Goodrich, which is nothing but an impedance matching device, mm-hmm. which adds a little something. It has a volume control on it mm-hmm. and that. But that's all I use for the studio, and then hopefully they will send reverb to me through my headsets so I can sound better than I actually sound, maybe.
Well.
And then they add whatever reverbs they want later. We talked about that.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think pretty soon here we'll take a quick little break, but when we get back, we want to talk about you're doing a new album, and you're working with Skip on that, and we want to talk about that. So the two of you guys can tell us about that album. But before we do that, maybe I could get you to kind of go through maybe you could go through and show us the lick that you do in Tears in Heaven and kind of go through that a little bit and show the Tears in Heaven, because you're featured quite a bit in that song.
Yeah, I got really lucky. There's a story that goes with that. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much time we have before
break. We have
plenty
of time. Tell us the story.
Well, the story goes, I went down to the Village Recorders, which you may know where that is, down mm-hmm. in Santa Monica, this day, and it was just like another call, another day at the office for me. Not to say that sessions are easy. They're not easy all the time, but this was just a call I got. I show up. Oh, this is going to be for Eric Clapton, but he's not here. He's sick. He doesn't feel well today, so we're going to come back tomorrow. So I didn't use cartridge in those days, which I still really don't. And so I loaded all my stuff back in my truck, go home, come back the next day, same routine. Eric's here today, and he's going to be able to sing, and it's going to be just fine. So we worked on Tears in Heaven most of the morning, and Eric says, let's have lunch. So he had everything catered in. We had lunch. It was beautiful. He's a really nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
And worked on the song the rest of the day. Now, this is one song for the entire day. So after he got the take that he wanted, I was packing up, going to load back up in the truck. He comes out into the studio and he says, but wait until everybody leaves because I want you to play the solo. That's when I got nervous. But he knew what he wanted, and he showed me on the Telecaster.
Mm-hmm.
It was a Tele, too, I'm pretty sure, not a Strat. And just one that they had around there.
Mm-hmm.
And he showed me the line for the solo, and what I didn't know was that he was going to play unison with me on the first half and double it with harmony on the second half. So he showed me the solo, which goes like, And then Eric played the harmony. And that was the solo for the record. And then it goes to the bridge, to the little reprise thing.
Now, Eric was very specific in that instance. He wanted a certain thing. In a lot of your sessions, like, for example, the Bird session, do they have very specific things? Do they write it out for you, or do they pretty much let you just, like, put something in there?
First of all, I don't read music as notation.
Okay.
I can read chord charts.
Okay.
So when somebody says, well, here, just let me write it out for you, they're wasting their efforts. you know, I learned to play by ear, and I'm sure that I would have been a better musician if I'd learned to read, too. And I would say that to any young player. Learn how to read music, but learn how to play also.
Right.
So there was no writing parts out. We just kind of figured out our own parts and tried to needle them in and out of the other guy's parts, sort of stay out of the way. Although listening to Sweetheart of the Rodeo, we were kind of in each other's way the whole time.
It's a fun album, though. It's such so many great songs.
But like, for example, like Barry Manilow or even Elton John, where there's a lot of orchestration, and he has pretty, you know, if I don't know which Elton John album were you, was it Madman Across the Water?
You know, I don't remember. I've done a couple of different times I've worked for Elton.
Because the one I'm thinking off the top of my head that I know is steel guitar was Leave On, the song Leave On. It's throughout it. But anyway, his stuff was orchestrated and stuff like that. So, I mean, I know it limits how much you can really stretch. Did they give you a lot of leeway, or, you know, on those bigger sessions where it's usually a bigger production, or are they very specific where you know, just play in this part, or they just let you go?
They kind of let you go. I mean, steel guitar and strings fit well together. Although the string players don't like you there when they're playing, because it's you kind of steal the thunder a little bit. But if it's orchestrated out, for instance, Skip did this song called Forever Loving You and played a string part. And it's beautiful. It sounds like a movie track.
Mm-hmm.
And that's for my own record that I'm talking about. And I just played in and out. I played the melody. If you play the melody or just play chords along with the strings, it's such a beautiful instrument that it'll almost fit anywhere.
Let me ask Skip, since you're talking about strings. Now, you producing his solo album and arranging it, and also being a keyboard player besides being a steel player, how do you approach? Now, you got a string part in mind for this song, and you know what his instrument. So, how is there any special thing you do in arranging for that to bring it out, or?
Well, you have to treat the steel as though it was the vocal.
Okay.
So just arrange for it as if it were a singer, because that's basically what it is.
Okay. But, I mean, do you find that, do you have them play together, or do you, now, and let me ask you this, too, because you guys have both done sessions, especially in Nashville, and a Nashville string section is totally different than an L.A. string section, because they basically do head charts, basically improvise like you would do. And they basically get chord symbols, and it's an interesting way to play, but it's amazing what these guys do just off the top of their heads. And the section's so tight, they just know what to do. Now, do you, you know, in your approach to that, and if you're using live strings, do you kind of just let them intermix, or do you?
No, I sort of plan it out.
Okay.
I plan it out who's going to play what part from low to high or high to low. And sometimes you double what the steel is doing. Sometimes you counterpoint it. Sometimes you go where he isn't. Just all the different tricks you could pull out of your bag of tricks in arranging.
Oh, okay. But it's not a problem. I mean, the blending, I know the sustain on a pedal steel is just amazing. You get these nice, you can actually do kind of quote unquote pads, so to speak, on a pedal steel very effectively. So now let me ask you another thing too. On have you ever got to experiment using? I know you've probably used phasers and flangers and choruses. Have you ever used Leslie's on your guitar, like Rusty Young from Poco? Have you ever experimented with doing bizarre stuff like that?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I had a Leslie, and we actually had Fender. It was a Fender Leslie.
Oh, okay, I remember those.
And we had them put a 12-inch JBL in there, so it would take more load, you know, because you could blow up those little Jensen speakers.
Oh, yeah.
With not a problem. and I hauled that thing around for a lot of years, you know, trying to sound like something different. And I even, at one time, I was using a doubler pedal, you know, those little copper color, mm-hmm. you know, where you kick it on and it doubles your sound. Sounds like a bass player is playing lines with
oh,
you.
Oh, an octave box.
Octave box. Okay. Octaver.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah, so I've done that. I've used a little bit of fuzz, not too much, because I don't care for distortion on the steel. But, yeah, some experimentation for sure.
That's interesting, because the first time I had heard a Leslie with a steel was Rusty Young from Poco, who, good feeling to know, where he cranks it up. It's really dirty. It sounds like, I mean, you got to listen. I mean, you can tell by his phrasing, but to most ears, probably it would sound like an organ. They wouldn't know the difference because he was doing kind of little blues riffs in there and stuff. But that's pretty interesting. Yeah, no, do you find yourself if you were using a phaser or a delay, do they do that in studio now, or do you prefer to use a pedal if you're requested to do something? Or do they just let you set up what you want, or, you know, like on a certain session, you just say, let me try this phaser, or do they tell you what to use on it?
It's about half and half, you know. Sometimes you can get away with it. If you have an engineer that's cool, you know, that wants to try things, they'll let you do it. Otherwise, they do it at the end, but you can never really trust that they'll come up with the same idea you had, because you're not there, you don't have any control.
Right. But, I mean, the artists, are they usually pretty open for you to experiment, or are they pretty specific?
In my own case, they call me for what I do, and that's play straight ahead.
Okay.
Steel guitar.
Well, why don't we take a quick little break here, Jeff, and then we'll come back with J.D. Manis and Skip.
Okay, here we go. Do you want to get the best possible tone from your acoustic instrument? Guitar Hummer is a guitar stand that does more than just rest your guitar. It creates a gentle but continuous vibration that is equivalent to playing your instrument all day, every day. This concentrates years of seasoning into mere weeks, improving tone and sustain. You may not be able to afford a vintage guitar, but you now can achieve vintage sound. But don't take our word for it. Try it for 60 days, and if you don't notice a marked difference, return it for a full refund. Go to guitarhummer.com for more information or to purchase.
Hi, this is Aaron Raby from Sweetwater, inviting you to come to Sweetwater.com to check out our fantastic 24-day holiday giveaway. Every day from December 1st to December 21st, we'll be giving away fantastic prizes, including full-blown home studios from Avid, Presonus, guitar rigs from Line 6, PA gear from QSC, guitars from Martin, digital drums from Yamaha, and much more. Check it out at Sweetwater.com.
Hi, this is Gary Sill at Sill Music Supply, headquartered in Mount Zion, Illinois. We would love to have you guys give us a call. Check our website out. We have Mullen, brand new Mullen pedal steels. We have Hilton volume pedals for the guitar player and the steel guitar player. So if you're wanting to go from guitar to steel guitar, I'm the guy we need to be talking, because we have the products for you. And we want to help you, and we are at 217-433-7455, SillMusicSupply.com. Now let's all get back to JD and the interview that's going on. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was a nice setup.
I just want to mention real quick, I brought down just to show JD and Skip, Gary built for me a lap steel, and it's a pretty beautiful. I'll post some pictures up on Facebook, But yeah, he built it by hand, and they were fooling around with it before the show. And just want to mention that's another thing he does, not all the time, but it's pretty cool. He takes a lot of care in building them, and it's a great – the guys liked it, and I just wanted to mention that. So yeah, check out his stuff. I've used his Hilton pedals. They're great too.
Yep, yep.
And so anyway, check that out.
JD, why don't you give us a little something there?
This is a song written by Buddy Emmons when he was 14 years old.
Oh, cool.
And it's one of his most requested songs when he plays. When he does play, he's been off for a while now, but we recorded it on my own record here, so I'll just play a little bit of it. It's called Blue Jade. I'll go to the bridge.
It's just amazing how you get that sustain. I know a lot of it, the technique is how you ride the volume pedal to get it that consistent. Have you ever had the need to use a compressor live, or have you ever, I'm sure they do it in the studio, but have you ever needed that? I mean, it sounds like it's got like your levels, like it's in the pocket there.
Not playing live so much. In the studio, you're right. They put a compressor on there. And of course, as you well know, if you put too much on there, then it clips.
Yeah.
But so I don't mind a compressor if it's just enough to do the job. But as far as live playing, no. We try to use dynamics and, you know, stay out of each other's way so there's room for everybody to play so that the levels can be at a certain point.
Right.
If we're all playing all the time, so to speak, that doesn't work.
No, the levels on the, looking on the board here, you're just right there. I mean, that's pretty cool.
So speaking of your live rig, what is your live rig that you play?
I usually use two Evans amps. They have 15-inch speakers in them. Again, Black Widows, 1501s. Mm-hmm. And I go through a rack. It's a little bit of a weird way to hook things up, but I come from the guitar, from the volume pedal, into the main input on one amp. Mm-hmm. I call that the number one. Then I come out of the effects loop back into my rack, go all through the rack with two outs of the last piece, go back into both effects loops on each amp.
Okay.
And so the one is really a slave.
Right, you're just coming.
But it's affects both sides. It's not stereo. But I put one speaker out of phase.
Oh, really?
Oh, wow.
Which broadens the sound. You can't record it, and you can't mic it unless they turn the signal back over in the house. But in that instance, you just mic one amp, and it really broadens it. It almost makes it stereo at least 15 feet out in front of you. Beyond that, nobody can tell the difference. So it's mostly for us players.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting, the out-of-phase effect.
Yeah.
So you're basically using the second amp just as the power amp. You're using one preamp, splitting out through the effects into the two power stages.
Absolutely.
Now, you just came back from Ireland, right?
Yes.
And you were playing pedal steel out there. Because the pedal steel is a very American instrument. How do they take the pedal steel? How do they use it?
It's the same. There are steel players all over Europe. Mm. And we even had four young guys from Spain came all the way from Spain to Ireland.
Wow.
They heard you know, I don't want to sound too weird about it, but they heard I was going to be there, and they wanted to see what was going on, and they were players. Very little English, but they got their message across. They came to hear the steel guitar.
Wow.
And there was a young lady there named Sarah Jory, mm-hmm. which you may have heard of. She's terrific. Just the best show person, plays steel, and she puts on a show. So, yeah, there were steel players from all over Europe that came to the Ireland show.
Wow. Have you heard any of the players integrating into Celtic music like that, using pedals? Because I know a lot, they're traditional Western music, we can say, so to speak. A lot of that was influenced by Irish, you know, and in the Irish use banjos and, you know, a fiddle, you know. It's a lot of similarities there. Do you find that they're starting to adopt the pedal steel?
I cannot answer that because I haven't seen that happen. I don't know if Skip has.
I haven't either, but it should.
It should happen, absolutely.
So Skip, so you're working on a record with JD, mm-hmm. putting out, as he's saying, his one and only solo record. Is that right?
Yeah, for now, anyway.
Okay, all right. Well, let's hope it's not, but it'll be his first. So tell us about that. What are you guys doing there with that record that'll be coming out next year?
Well, we're doing a mixture of a couple of originals, JD's originals, a couple of old standards, a couple of songs that he's cut with Tears in Heaven, Blue Jade, Misty, you know, songs that he's cut with other artists, and, you know, a couple of good country shuffles, and got a bunch of good people on it. We have Albert Lees on a track, John Jorgensen, Greg Lees, Kerry Park, been playing guitar on it. Peter Freiberger on bass, Jimmy Christie, Maria Martinez on drums, and Herb Peterson puts a banjo on it, and it sounded good. It's a good-sounding, eclectic record. Like JD says, it's not a record of steel guitar rag every other song. It's it's different from what you might expect.
Now, in recording this album, are you recording them like the old way as an ensemble, or are you bringing people in and overdubbing, or is it
mostly bringing people in and overdubbing? We're sort of constrained that we're doing it at a home studio, so we've done a few tracks that were at other studios where everybody played at once, and then we've done other ones where we sort of piecemealed it and put it together.
Okay.
Now let me just drop this idea in your guys' head, because I know you're saying it's your one and only solo record, but maybe it's your one and only solo record that's about your solo. But what if you did, as a second one, JD and Friends? It's a new thing a lot of people are doing. So you like bring in a lot of those artists that you played and have them play on your songs. You know what I'm saying? So like bring in like an Eric Clapton or whatever, and he plays one of your songs rather than you playing his song.
Well, that would be good. We actually thought of getting Eric to play on Tears in Heaven because we cut that.
Right.
And we even left room for him. But as far as getting him there to do that is a whole nother story. I haven't spoken to him since we cut.
Wow.
So.
Well, maybe if he's listening.
But the JD and Friends thing, that's a good idea, sure.
Yeah. Why not? I mean, how many have you got? The list I named at the beginning was not even probably 2% of who you played with. I mean, it's amazing all the people you played with. I mean, just in the Joe Walsh album was Joe Walsh and Ringo Starr. So.
Yeah, that was a really fun day. Joe was a perfect gentleman. He was really nice to me that day, and I won't forget that. I played with Vince Gill. We did the first or second, I believe it was the first guitar show that Eric put on in Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
You remember that?
Mm-hmm. Oh, the Crossroads Festival.
Crossroads. And I was there with Vince Gill, and of course I didn't get a chance to talk to Eric. But Joe was there, and he comes up and taps me on the shoulder and goes, "Hey, JD." And it was really funny. The guys in the band are going, "Wait a minute, how does he know Joe?" You know, it was pretty cool. I was bursting my buttons at that time.
Did Joe tell you what he wanted, or did he let you just go for it?
It was a collaboration. I played, and he said, "No, don't do that there. Maybe do it on the next verse, you know, or something." But really, I'm lucky because I've been able to psych a song, figure out what it kind of needs from me.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a pretty straight-ahead song, if it has a lot of time changes and pushes and that's a whole different thing. But I've learned to figure out where this stuff should go. You know, you do an intro, And then you lay out for the first verse. Mm-hmm. And if there's a little reprise, you come in lightly, and then you play the chorus. And then it goes on. There's a solo, whoever might have the solo. And then when the song comes around the second time, you reverse the roles. I might play on the second verse, and somebody else will play the chorus, as far as fills go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then maybe we'll play as an ensemble to end the song. There's a formula. And especially in you know, earlier 70s, 80s country music, there's always a formula.
Now, you played with the Buckaroos. And was that, it was your first band you toured with, the Buckaroos?
Or that, yeah. Actually, as of note, I toured with a band, a club band. Mm-hmm. We would go to Albuquerque and play a club over there. But as far as touring, yes, Buck was the first.
And then while you were there, you was it your first time on TV was the Hee Haw Show, right?
Yes, yeah.
And since then, you've done quite a bit of soundtracks for TV. And you were actually telling us about a film you were just working on, the Superman track. Can you tell us about what you guys were doing at that? Both you and Skip were both up playing.
Yeah, there were 8 steel guitar players, 4 and 4, and we sat up over at Warner Brothers and all played at one time. We play every note of the scale. We might play, so E. But we would all 8 of us at one time play that note. Or we might play. And every day, we were there for 3 days, and every day they would move this ensemble of players to a different part of the room. In other words, we started where the cellos would set up, mm-hmm. graduate to where the violins were, and where the bass, you know, were set up. So they would get this different ambience in the room. And we did every note in the scale from the highest to the lowest, clear down to...
Wow.
And the room was vibrating. It was so cool. And they sampled this whole thing. Hans Zimmer mm-hmm. and his troupe, they sampled the whole thing and used it in the Superman movie. And it's not prevalent. You have to listen for it, but it's there. I can hear it somewhere in there where it goes... Where Superman takes off.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, the score uses a lot of these, like, drone sounds. And it's interesting you say it, because it did sound different, and it didn't sound like regular orchestra, though he stacks his orchestra up, but it probably... 8 of those guys would sound pretty ballsy, would be pretty meaty.
Yeah. So Skip was there, and you were playing a push-pull?
A push-pull? Rosewood push-pull.
Rosewood, but it wasn't black. But no. But it had to be different. You have to get that little bit different tone.
Yeah, that's... make the world go around.
That's right. So we're coming close to the end of the show. Before we go, I definitely want to thank our sponsors, Sweetwater and Guitar
Hummer.
Yeah,
check out. I'm sure that you can get the Sweetwater has PV, if I'm correct.
Yeah, they have PV.
Yes.
Yep. How can people find more about you, JD?
You can go to jdmanus.com, and I have a little website there where I sell... instructional videos. I have 2 of them with the tablature of the whole thing.
Oh, there you go. So if you're looking in to get into it or learn more about some songs that he's played on, then go to jdmanus.com. And before we go, would you mind playing us a little something, and then we'll end the show with the last minute of Tears in Heaven, where you're, you know, you and Eric kind of going back and forth as he's singing, you're playing fills in, and it sounds great.
Yeah, there's a single note stuff you can do on the steel. It's not all about, you know, big chords and volume pedal, but you can play, or you can play. Key. If you're going to go to A, you can play.
It's just the licks that you play, they're just, it's 100% taste.
Yes.
It's just great.
Well, JD, thank you so much.
Yes.
Skip, thank you so much. We'll have to have you both back on. Definitely when you have the album.
Yeah, we definitely want to hear this. This sounds great.
Thank you both so much.
Thank you. And we'll just go ahead.
Here we go. Good night, everybody. Well.